Okay, so thank you very much for the invitation to come and talk this afternoon. I'm Paul Ayres, I'm Director of Library Services at UCL and also Chair of the LERU Community of Chief Information Officers. LERU is the League of European Research Universities, which is based in Leuven in Belgium. But what I'm really going to do in the next 30-35 minutes is talk about UCL Press, which is the UK's first fully open access university press, and is run from the library in UCL. So I am not only Director of Library Services, but also Chief Executive of the press. And what I'm going to do is say just a very little bit about UCL to set our work in context, why, and it explains why we are doing this sort of activity, and then give a very brief journey through the work that UCL is doing, the library is leading on, in terms of open access activity in my university, and then come on to the main topic of the talk, which is the role of the library as publisher through the formation of UCL Press, and I'll describe our publishing activity and why we call ourselves the UK's first fully open access university press. So let's look at the context of UCL as an institution. This is the university, this is the founders' building in central London. We are the third oldest university in England after Oxford and Cambridge, and were founded in 1826. And these are some facts and figures which give you the shape and size of the university and the interests that our research active staff have in pursuing their research. So we are the top rated university in the UK in terms of research strength. Our total grant income in 2014-15 was just over £400 million, which is bigger than many total university budgets of some other universities in the UK. So this figure tells us that UCL is an extremely intensive research organisation where research really counts in terms of impact and visibility for the university in a global setting. We were seventh in the QS World Rankings of universities this year. And again, that is largely, though not entirely, due to our research activity. And according, if you look at these figures again, if you looked at the amount of research money that is paid into British universities by the research councils, by our seven research councils, UCL was awarded just under £150 million in 2014-15, which was the largest sum of research income from the research councils to any British university. So this gives you the size and the flavour of the institution. It is highly research intensive, very competitive, and expects to work on a global scale in terms of the research it produces and the outputs. And one part of that activity is open access publishing and compliance with open access mandates in the UK and from European funders. And it is UCL, it is the library that has led all this activity in terms of devising the open access policies, which my university has, and the levels of compliance that we show with researcher with research funder mandates. Europe has many, many research policies. The Pasteur 4OA project shows that Europe has 461 open access mandates, and none of them is the same. So for an institution like UCL, which is producing so much research and being funded from so many different places, they have to comply with all these different mandates from the different funders in the research space and for our researchers, for our research groups who are working on research activity, that's quite a confusing space to be. So one of the things the library has been able to do in UCL is to provide leadership and guidance in putting in place frameworks and support to help our researchers comply with all these research funder mandates. So some of the guidance we give is shown here on the screen. What I'm showing here is the LERU roadmap. So my working group in LERU produced in 2011 a roadmap for all the 21 research-intensive universities in LERU who wanted to move into an open access landscape and set up open access frameworks, policies and services at institutional level. So the roadmap tells you how to do that if you're starting from absolute scratch. And here at the top of the screen you see some of the issues which the LERU roadmap actually covers. And we talk about costs, how much a university is expected to spend in order to establish OA infrastructure, and then looked at different models, models of practice for meeting OA requirements that different universities had put into place. What does that look like then at an institution level? We spent a lot of the day looking at how open access has affected publishers and a little bit about how it's affected researchers. What has that done to the role of the library then in my institution, which is, as I said, a research intensive university that works on a global stage? Well, this is a diagram which shows the staffing structure that I've had to put in place in order to meet all the open access requirements that our researchers are expected to comply with. We have a head of open access services here at the top of the screen, and then a staffing complement of around 10 people altogether. These are 10 FTEs, full-time equivalents, that we put in place to run the various parts of the OA infrastructure. We have a discovery officer, that's the UCL discovery officer for our open access repository, and she has a staff as well, so there are about two members of staff looking after the repository on a day-to-day basis. Here at the bottom of the column on the left-hand side of the screen, four open access assistants. So these are people who go out to advocate, go out to the 11 schools and faculties in the university and explain what the funder policies are that researchers have to meet with and comply with, and also how to make their research open access if that's what the researcher wants to do. So it's taken for a university with a projected student body of 43,000 students and around 5,000 full-time staff members. It's taken me in the library a team of around 10 people full-time, 10 FTEs full-time, to actually deliver on the OA agenda. We've talked a little bit about compliance. Carolyn this morning talked about the need for UK universities to comply with research funder mandates, and these are the results for my university, for UCL, for one of these UK research funders. This is Research Councils UK, which is a consortium of seven research councils which work together under the RCUK umbrella. To the top research performing organisations in the UK, of which UCL is one, they make annual payments to pay for APCs, for article processing charges. So to my university, it's currently around £1 million a year that comes from RCUK to fund article processing charges. And that money is held by the library. So the library acts as the banker for this source of funding, which is coming into the university. And in order to comply with the funder requirements, we have to make a certain number of papers available as open access, and usually gold open access. So the target for this current year, which is year four of the funding agreement with RCUK, is for 1,090 papers to be made available as open access. And our target, our performance to the end of June, so just a short way into the reporting period, because we're talking about government funding years, which run from April to March, was we made 423 papers available. So about 39% of the target had already been reached by spending that £1 million, usually on gold OA. And the graph here at the bottom of the screen shows the proportion of gold OA payments, obviously the gold bars, versus the number of papers that are made available as green OA, and that's the green bar on the top of each column. And these are monthly columns stretching from April 15 through to the end of this reporting period, which was actually June this year. So well on the way, so for my university, well on the way to meeting the target. And that's important for the university, because unless we meet the target, the funder won't carry on giving the money year on year, because we have to report to the funder every year how we spent that £1 million that we have been given by the funder. And if we haven't spent the £1 million, they won't give us more funding in the following year. This is a graph showing the total number of APCs that my team has paid since we started counting article processing charges in April 2013. So in my university, because I have established the OA team in the library to manage all OA operations, all open access operations in UCL, all the payments are made centrally through the library, which is how we're able to track the payments. If the payments were made by individual departments or faculties from individual research grants, that would be extremely difficult, if not impossible, for the university to know how much is being spent on open access, because you couldn't track the payments across all 75 departments if the payments are devolved. But here they're all going through the library, so the library is able to track exactly what the university is paying for OA, because we hold all the OA funds. And you'll see here that since April 2013 we've paid around 2,800 APCs with money from Research Councils UK. We've paid 1,700 APCs for the Wellcome Trust. And UCL itself, as you probably saw on one of Carolyn's earlier graphs, also funds gold APC payments from its institutional research budget. So UCL separately has paid from the research budget that we manage 2,500 APCs, making a total of just over 7,000 APCs that we have paid since we started recording. And if we look at the UCL APC payment, not the Research Council's budget, because those are covered by a separate budget, but this is the budget for the UCL activity, for the £1.3 million that UCL is putting in to paying APC payments for our researchers. How are we spending that money? Well, it's clear here from the table that most of that money is being spent here. I've got a flicker here. There we go. £898,000 being spent on prepayments and memberships. So we're buying membership arrangements with individual publishers for unlimited or an agreed amount of APC publishing, for gold OA publishing, or we're joining a membership scheme which allows a gold OA publishing to take place with that publisher. And most of that UCL money at the moment, in terms of supporting OA, is being spent on membership schemes. Let me talk about one other aspect of our OA activity, just to set the context before I talk about UCL Press. And this is Dart Europe. We heard about this in our Hungarian presentation earlier today. Dart Europe is the European eTheses portal, which my university runs, where we provide through the a portal front end access to full access to open access research theses from research universities across Europe. And these are the results for Hungary. So in the portal, we're providing access to over 700,000. We've just passed the 700,000 mark. So there are 700,000 open access research theses available in the Dart Europe portal from just under 600 universities in Europe, or based in 28 European countries. And these are the results for the Hungarian universities that we have in the portal. We have just over 12,000 Hungarian theses in the portal, but not all your universities are represented in the portal. I'm sure if you look at the list, you'll see whether your university is listed there or not. If your university is not listed there and you would like your material to be made available in the portal, come and talk to me afterwards and we can make some arrangements to make sure that we start harvesting your metadata so that your Hungarian material is available. This is the main European gateway into European research theses, and if your university is not represented in the list, it means that the outputs from your students are not getting the visibility and the potential to be more cited that they deserve. So you're putting your students at a disadvantage because other European universities are making their research theses available and their students are getting more visibility as a result of their theses being present in the Dart Europe portal. So that's the context of open access activity that existed in my university. But why wasn't that enough? Why did I say, well, actually, that's a good start, but we haven't done everything that we should do. I want to become an open access publisher. And it was my idea to become an open access publisher. And that's what we did. And the clue as to why that was a good idea is in this slide here. This is a list of the downloads from UCL Discovery, which is our green open access repository, and it is a list of the 10 most popular downloads in the first quarter of 2016. And you'll see that two of these 10 items, number 1 and number 5, are actually books. No, that type of publishing output, which practically every OA supporter or producer says, will not work in an open access environment. And this table tells you that that view is wrong. It's one of the great urban myths that open access for monographs doesn't work in the arts, humanities, and social sciences, because it does work. And that's what this table is showing, because it's showing that the most downloaded book is this book here on the top right-hand corner by Danny Miller, one of our researchers in anthropology, who is funded by the European Research Council. And it's producing a list of 10 books based on his European Research Council funding on the use of social media in different parts of the world. And the most downloaded book is this one, the generic introduction to the series, how social media has changed the world. And this has had 6,500 downloads. It was only published in 2016, so it's been in production for less than a year, and it's already had 6,000 downloads. If you were selling this monograph commercially as a print book, if you had 400 sales of a print copy, you'd say that was a good outcome for a research monograph. This has already had 6,500 downloads within 12 months. There are another 10 books in the series, and you see number 5 is another one in that series. That's had 2,000 downloads in the time that it has been available. So that's why we've started UCL Press, because an open access monograph publishing activity will revolutionise the way that your research outputs in monograph form are made available and how they are used by other people who would never see the printed copy if it were for sale in a conventional way through sales of print copy over the bookshop counter in a bookshop. So what does the press look like? Well, it fits into the library strategy. This was another driver for me starting the press. These are the 6 key performance areas in the library strategy, and open access sits in the 6th key performance area down here at the bottom of the screen, which is looking at communication, open access, and outreach. And the press is actually just 1 year old. We launched it On the 4th of June 2015, and these are pictures from the launch party in my university in central London. This is the launch book here on the left-hand side by Professor Lisa Jardine on Temptation in the Archives. It's a collection of her essays on lives and letters of historical figures in the Dutch Golden Age in the 17th century. And this is Professor, the late Professor Jardine, I'm afraid she's no longer with us, sitting here at the launch party, just about to give the most fantastic speech from an academic as our launch author on why she chose UCL Press and why she absolutely insisted that her last book, because this is her last book, why her last book was open access and why it wouldn't work and why she wasn't interested in publishing it as a commercial monograph through the commercial business route. She was absolutely committed to open access as a way of opening up the material that she was describing and is contained in the book to a wider audience. And she thought that open access was the only way that she wanted to do that. So this is the model for UCL Press. Most open access policies, nearly all the open access policies that we've been discussing today from our research funders, as I say, actually exclude monographs on the grounds they think it won't work, or there isn't enough infrastructure in the OA system to allow academics to publish OA monographs. So one of the things I've tried to prove, and I think I am proving, is that that's a false assumption, that there is interest and there is potential for research academics in arts, humanities and social sciences to publish open access monographs. And the library in your institution, if you are setting up a university press, is the place where that activity can start. And that's why we launched this activity in UCL from the library. So while I'm here as Chief Executive of UCL Press today, I'm conscious of the fact, I want to make it clear, that this press is based in the library, and it's a new activity the library has started to support the research activity of the university and to break the current mould in the business model for research monographs that are published through conventional publishing systems. We are the first fully open access university press in the UK, and we see open access as an opportunity, not as a threat. Some of the discussions today I don't recognise, because it presents open access as a problem, a threat, or a challenge. I don't see it as any of those things. I see it as an opportunity to do things differently and to succeed. And if you have a positive attitude and come to the workspace with that idea in mind, that success is the only thing you're interested in, then you will succeed. And open access publishing through a monograph system like this will work. This is the staffing structure for UCL Press. I employ six members of staff. They're all publishers. They're not librarians, although the press is based in the library. They are all publishers. So Lara Spiker, my publishing manager, was head of publishing at the British Library and came to us down the road from the British Library. And we are our next line of staff here in purple in the middle of the screen. These are all commercial publishers, or people who've worked in commercial publishing systems, who've chosen to work with us in the press. So in fact, one of our colleagues here, who is our managing editor, has come to us from Oxford University Press because she wanted to work in London, but also in a fully open access environment. So none of these people is a librarian. They're all publishers, and they've taught me how to publish. I'm a librarian, and I know a bit about open access, and I have taught them how to adapt their business to work in an OA environment. Because they didn't come, as they would be the first to admit, they didn't come with any experience of open access publishing. They came as publishers. I came to the table as someone who worked a great deal in open access, but knew nothing about publishing as an industry. So we meet in the middle. I'm the chief executive. They tell me how to publish. I tell them what the business model should look like and how we're going to make the most of the opportunities that open access provides. And it has been a fantastically successful model to date, as I'll be able to show with some more statistics. So we have a fully open access business model. We do sell print copies. We have a print-on-demand service, so you can log on to the UCL Press website, which is embedded here in the slides, and you can see the free digital copy of all our monographs, so Lisa Jardine's monograph on temptation in the archives, Danny Miller's books on social media. These are all available free at Point of Views with no barrier as a PDF or in an enhanced digital version through our enhanced digital interface. If you want to buy a paper copy, you can do, and then that's a transaction between you as the reader and the supplier who sits behind the website. We use a third party to produce print on demand for all our books. Now, if you have, the most common reason that some people will give you for not developing an open access monograph system is, I won't sell any books, I won't make any money. Because if you're giving the content away, if it's free through the PDF or through the enhanced digital version, why would anybody buy a paper copy? Do you think they buy paper copies? Who thinks they buy, I'm still selling paper copy? Okay, about half of you. Who thinks I'm not selling any paper copy? Who doesn't know? Okay, a very honest lady at the back says she doesn't know. That's a very, very brave and sensible position to take. In fact, we are selling paper copy. Why? Because the digital copy acts as a marketing tool which encourages the reader who has really enjoyed interacting with the book to go out and buy or do a transaction online and buy a paper copy. And in fact, the fact that these books are available free as digital outputs has made absolutely no difference to the level of sales. We produced 13 books, published 13 books in our first year of activity. And each one is selling on average around 175 copies. And they will sell more because we're only a year old. That's in the first year of production. So those figures will increase. So this magic figure of 400 copies as being a very good output in terms of sales of paper copy will be attained probably by most of these books. So free online open access research monographs has not dented the sale of the print version because people are still wanting to buy that. So these are the 13, as I say, we have produced 13 research monographs in the first year of publishing. Our aim this year is to publish 30 books. We've had 150 submissions from authors, all of them out in various stages of peer review at the moment, because all the books are peer reviewed before we send them through, or we'll sign the contract with the author and send them through to production. And most of those books, most of those 150 proposals, probably will come through peer review as being publishable. That's far more, those are far more monographs than we have capacity to publish already, and we're only 12 months old. So either I need to, I probably do need to increase the number of staff in that system in order to cope with the extra demand. Or I say to the authors, I'm sorry, even though we're here to help you, I'm not going to be able to publish. That's not a message I'm very comfortable with, so that isn't the message I want to leave. But there is already more demand than this press will be able to supply in year two. The 13 monographs that we've had, available on the website, they've had just over 40,000 downloads of the flat PDF from the Discovery, because the copy sits in the UCL Discovery, which is the UCL repository. So that's the silo where the content is curated. And we've had about 20,000 views from the enhanced digital version, which is not the flat PDF, but has a enhanced front end that we've developed in conjunction with a third party to produce an enhanced, but with video and more photographs and interviews with the author and the ability to leave comments for the author to respond to if, as a reader, you want to leave a comment on what you're reading in his or her book. As I say, overall, we've already sold just over 2,250 print sales. We've just launched our first textbook, so those 13 books are research monographs. We're also going to launch a series of textbooks, open access textbooks. That's really radical, because if not many people publish OA research monographs, hardly anybody publishes OA textbooks. We are UCL Press is going to produce OA textbooks, and we've just produced our first. This is a textbook on, I'm afraid it's a rather grim subject, if you're like me, you're a historian and don't know anything about medicine. It's got some rather grim medical photos. It's on burns and plastic surgery, which is produced by the Royal Free Hospital in London, which is a specialist centre for the treatment of burns and with plastic surgery, and comes from the master's course. And Deepak Kailaskar, who's the first named author here, is one of the colleagues here in the photo, which is the front cover for the book. And I asked him at the launch, his launch party, why he wanted to publish his textbook with UCL Press. Because if he had placed it with a commercial publisher, he could have made, I imagine, quite a bit of money on royalties. It's a very easy discussion for UCL Press with an author when the author comes to say, how much am I going to get in royalties? I say, oh, that's very easy, we don't pay royalties. So if you want to earn royalties, you better go and publish with somebody else, I'm afraid, because I'm not going to pay you royalties. If you want to publish in OA because you believe in the subject and you want greater dissemination, greater visibility for your output, then UCL Press is for you. If you want to go and make money, that's fantastic, absolutely up to you, but you go and publish with somebody else, because you won't make any money from me. And we've had one or two people who said, oh, I want to publish my book with a, I want to get royalties, so I'm going to publish with somebody else. But Deepak didn't say that. He said, I want to publish with UCL Press precisely because it is an open access press, and I'm more interested in getting my textbook out to developing countries, and countries that don't have the skill and knowledge about plastic surgery that we have here in London. I want to share that with the rest of the world. And that's why OA is good for them, and good for textbooks, and good for learning, because it does tick that box and enables you to deliver on that agenda, which commercial publishing does not do. We publish journals too, so these are the journals that we have taken on in the press. Some are migrants from commercial publishers. Some are new journals that have started. So Architecture MPS is a new journal, a completely new electronic journal that has been started. And some, like the Journal of the Sylvia Townsend Warner Society, are society journals that existed in paper form but never had a digital component because they didn't have the skill and the knowledge or the money to develop a digital front end. So UCL Press has given them a digital presence. We also host student journals as well. So these are journals which we encourage our students and student societies to publish as part of their curriculum activity in UCL. So there are seven journals here from student societies in UCL. They're not UCL Press journals per se, because they don't carry the UCL Press imprint, but UCL Press provides the infrastructure to allow the students to produce these journals themselves, or student societies to produce the journals themselves. And that we're using a system we developed in UCL as a result of two JISC-funded projects. So thank you to JISC for providing the initial funding that allowed us to develop this system. We call it an overlay journal system, where the content of these seven journals sits in UCL Discovery. So the silo is the repository, the green open access repository that UCL is running, that's based in the library. And there's a discovery layer over the and presentation layer over the top of the repository using OJS, Open Journal System. And that produces the front end that the editors use in order to produce the journal. So it's the student society, the peer reviewers that are using that layer to manage the flow of manuscripts into the journal. and the society uses in order to present the final version of the issue of the journal to the world. So this is what an overlay journal looks like. This is the splash page for volume 17 of the Journal of Bentham Studies, which is an overlay journal in the UCL sense. This is the initial page that a reader would discover if they were doing a search in Google, since all this material would be indexed in Google. They will click on the link onto volume 17 and get the contents page, which is here. This is Jeremy Bentham, our 17th century utilitarian philosopher. 18th century utilitarian philosopher, who is one of the founding fathers of UCL, who, amongst other things, invented the word international. So when we say international, it's Bentham invented that word because he saw it as a way of breaking down national boundaries. So you've got the contents page here, volume 17. You then click on the contents here on the bottom left of the screen. Each of the articles is indexed with a clickable link. You get the splash page for that individual article. So this article is entitled Hedonism Before Bentham. It has an abstract. We have some download stats as well, so the author can see how many times his or her article is being downloaded and quote this in their resumes and CV if they're applying for another post. They can click on the abstract, get the splash page for the actual article, and it's inviting you to download. The article is a PDF, and there's the full text of the article. So about four clicks, and you've got from discovery in Google to the full text of the article. And this is one of the seven journals that we are hosting for students in our overlay journal system. So UCL Press, finally, my final slide. UCL Press is a UCL activity. We use the publishing services for research monographs, journals and textbooks to support our research outputs, because we are very research-intensive universities, a very research-intensive university, but we will also publish for other people. So we will run publishing services, either consultancy services, if you want to set up your own open access publishing activity in your own university, Lara and her team will come out and do consultancy for you in order to tell you what you need to do if you want to build something like UCL Press in your own university, if you want to have all your own infrastructure as we have built the infrastructure in UCL. We also do something else. If you don't want to build your own infrastructure but still want to have an OA Press that you're publishing, using to publish monographs and textbooks and journals, we will provide those publishing services for you under contract. So you can badge it as a consortial press by all Hungarian universities, or an individual Hungarian university, or an individual Slovenian university, or all the libraries in Slovenia that we'll be visiting later this week. And UCL Press can offer that as a publishing service, badged in the way that you want it, presented in the way that you want it. It won't look like UCL Press, it will look like your press, but it will be UCL Press behind the scenes. They're actually running the back end for you, so that you don't have to build that infrastructure yourself, if that's the model that you want to follow. And this is best done if it's run from a library. As I'm saying, open access publishing for monographs is an opportunity to reinvent the role of the library in the research space, in the teaching and learning space, and in the outreach space. And libraries are the best people in the university to take on this activity if you're starting from scratch. So my conclusion is open access is an opportunity. It's not a problem. It's not a challenge. It's not something to worry about. It's something to rejoice in, because it presents so many opportunities for you to reassert a leadership role in your organisation, to guide it to the next generation in terms of the dissemination of its research and leading learning outputs. So the library can and should assert a leadership role in open access by becoming a publisher. So, and if you become a publisher, you're not simply a creator of knowledge. Sorry, you're not simply a conserver of knowledge or a cataloguer of existing knowledge. You're creating new knowledge. So you become a knowledge creator, not simply a knowledge conserver. And that's an important new role, because it is an important new role for the library in this very, very exciting space. If you have been, thank you for listening. I'd be very happy to hear any comments or take any questions that you might have. So any questions or especially if you disagree, I'd really like to hear it if you disagree. Anybody violently disagree or want to make any point?
Are you able to cover all of your costs, all of your publishing costs for all of your journals and especially the monograph publishing?
Am I able to cover the cost as a
publisher? Yes.
Yes, we are at the moment because we have a 3-year business plan, and the money to fund the infrastructure and the activity comes from, I mentioned at the start, the UCL research budget, £409 million coming in to the university to fund research activity. The press is part of that activity and takes a tiny percent of that research income, a lot less than 1% of the research income coming into UCL is spent on the press. So yes, we are able to fund it because we think it's important. And what do we get in return? We get the greater impact that open access to these research outputs brings. It encourages more students to apply to UCL as their first port of call when they're choosing to do postgraduate research. We already know from the interviews that our graduate school has with new PhD students, new master's students. Why did you choose UCL? Oh, we know about your research because we saw it in the repository, we've seen it in the press. So we already know that's having an impact in terms of generating income for the university through student fees. So that's why the research budget can be used to fund the publishing costs. Hello.
Other universities in the UK, especially the research universities, taking on a very similar role. I mean, have you had any inquiry from other universities about monographs or like learning from UCL about perhaps going in the same direction?
Well, we have two university presses from the UK speaking on the platform today, so you must ask them. I can't speak for them. I can say that we have a list of research-intensive universities in the UK who are coming to see us to see whether we will act as their publisher. So I hadn't planned to do this in year two. I'd rather hope we could establish the press a bit more securely in terms of outputs first before we offered the commercial publishing service. But it's become so popular and so many people have asked us about it, I had to bring that forward in the business plan. So the answer is, not speaking for the two university presses that are in the room from the UK, but yes, we are having a great deal of interest from other research universities. Yeah. Okay, I better hand over. Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.